For over 20 years, New Zealand composer John Sarthis has split his time between teaching at the New Zealand School of Music and writing music, a lot of very good music. But it took a concert at the Royal Albert Hall to make him decide to become a full-time creative composer. Ironically or not, that concert was the 40th anniversary of session group turned rock band Toto. But living up the Horowhenua coast has allowed John to devote time to a project called It's Already Tomorrow, inspired by the worldwide pandemic.
I stand here, eyes covered by many hands. They're trying to stop me from understanding your struggle. Got to undone.
The album of It's Already Tomorrow drops, as they say, this Friday, and it's unlike anything John has done before. It's a multi-generational, multicultural, multi-genre project in motion. Ooh-er. John Sarthis, welcome to the show.
Hey, very nice to be here.
Well, first, Toto, you're obviously a big fan.
Yes, I am, and I have been listening to them for those 40 years that they were celebrating in that concert. So, I started listening to Toto when I was before I was a teenager, in fact. Mm. And they've been one of those groups of musicians that, for my whole journey as a musician myself, they've kind of been compass points. You know, they kind of keep you on the track that you would like to stay on in terms of the kinds of things you'd like to achieve with music. So, yeah, they've been very important to me.
They're spectacularly good musicians, and I was wondering what it was about the Albert Hall gig that made you decide to change direction, to go full-time in composing.
Well, you have to understand that I am a singer-phobe and a dancer-phobe, which is no one has ever heard me sing or seen me dance. And within 5 minutes of being at that Toto concert, I was up on my feet dancing and singing my lungs out. So it just kind of brought to me, as great as this journey of, you know, the teaching and composing combination has been, there is a whole side to music that I personally haven't really explored. And that side is being in the public, you know, being a part of the presentation of music. So that concert, it didn't just inspire me to let go of my day job, so to speak, but it also inspired me to do what I've always wanted to, which is to get back into performing. That was really the big push that I got from seeing these exceptional and extraordinary musicians having such an incredible kind of loving experience with the audience that I just thought, well, for the time that I've got left, I'd like to taste that in some way.
Now, you've collaborated with a lot of musicians and a lot of non-musicians, just great artists, people like Salman Rushdie, for example, in the past. But this is quite different. This is bigger. And it started with a team up with guitarist-composer Jack Hooker, didn't it?
Yes. And Jack was once a student of mine at the New Zealand School of Music. And we worked very hard together on a project called No Man's Land. And Jack came over to Europe for 3 months with me and you know, we work very intensely together. And since he's graduated, we've become good friends and collaborators.
So how does this work? You two got together to produce, well, you've referred to them as musical seeds. Would you like to elucidate a little bit on that?
Yeah, so the thing about having a project which involves so many different kinds of musical artists is that it can end up just being a collection of songs that really don't have anything to do with each other. And we wanted to find a kind of, I don't know, a nucleus to the whole endeavor that would somehow bind all the music together. And so Jack came out here to Wairarere, where I am based at the moment, and we spent a week creating these musical seeds. We call them seeds because they're not finished pieces of music. They might just be layers that, you know, end up in a song. Or they might just be vocal things that are 3 to 5 seconds long, any range of things you can imagine. And we made a lot of these things and we put them into a folder on Dropbox and essentially offered them to the artists to use as starting points. And, you know, you've referred to the project already as multi many things. and so one of the things we were very clear about was no expectation There's no expectation to produce anything of a certain kind. The only directive was you had to start somehow with something from this collection of musical seeds.
So you brought in 8 producers. Who were they and where did they come from?
Well, all New Zealanders, and one of them is becoming a New Zealander at the moment. So they are all from New Zealand, but living, some of them, in far-flung parts of the world. So firstly, Indy, Indira Force is her full name. Indy is a fantastic electronica artist and vocalist living in Berlin. I think Indy's just come back to New Zealand, actually, from Berlin. And there's an album of hers which I got to know quite well, which is absolutely incredible. And we asked her to be a part of this. My own son, Emmanuel, who's very successful as a hip-hop artist and producer under the name of Name UL. We also invited Emmanuel onto the project. Briar Prestiti, who's an ex-student of mine from a while ago now, living in Greece, fantastic producer and vocalist. And James Uhringer, who originally from America but has now settled in Wellington with his wife Chantal Claret, and they've just become parents, so you know they're very settled here. Mm. And James has a huge history in the States with his own band, Mindless Self-Indulgence. He's a film composer, game composer, who was a henchman in Guardians of the Galaxy 2. So he has an amazing career. And then a duo, two sisters, Purple Pilgrims, Valentine and Clementine Nixon, who have a well-established history of really great music. They're from up north. And then Arjuna Oaks, young Wellington-based singer-songwriter composer, who I'm also mentoring as part of the Arts Foundation Springboard program, which was just launched this year. So Arjuna and I actually collaborated on a track, Unlearn, which has been a very special journey for me. And Jack Hooker himself has created his own track on the album. And finally, Grayson Gilmore, a very well-known and highly respected singer-songwriter and film and television composer.
I know also that you've used a limited number of, if you like, guest performers in this. I mean, and they're a considerable range of talents as well.
Absolutely. So we have 3 from New Zealand. We have Hayden Chisholm, an amazing musician. I mean, he's known as a saxophone player, but he's much broader than that. And Hayden is currently based in Serbia. And then James Wiley, who was originally a saxophone player from New Zealand, who has become very involved in the Iranian Kemenche, bowed instrument, and is now living in Thessaloniki with his own family in Greece, and is becoming more Greek than most Greeks I know, I have to say. So James is an extraordinary person on an amazing journey. And then Ariana Tikau, who was a very recent recipient of the Arts Foundation Laureate Award.
Now, she's fascinating. She's her specialist subject is traditional Maori instruments, basically, isn't it?
Correct. And Ariana is also a singer, also a vocalist. Mm. Yes, very much so. And Ariana's been crossing a lot of what we would call musical boundaries, performing with, I think, the Christchurch Symphony. They're a piece of Philip Brownlee's, and you know, crossing into all kinds of different musical environments. Oh, there are 2 more. There are 2 Greek musicians that, because I'm involved, there's kind of an inevitability that some aspect of Greek culture will be imported into a project. And so Sophia Labropoulou, who plays the kanun, and Vagelis Karipis, who plays percussion, they've both featured on a number of tracks of this album.
So how does it work exactly? I mean, you get the producer is handed the, as you say, the various musical seeds. They work with some stuff, and what? They then get in touch with these musicians, or do these musicians get in touch with them?
No, the first of those. So the producers start writing their piece, and knowing that these musicians are available, as the music forms, they have in the back of their heads, oh, wouldn't it be great to get, for instance, some saxophone from Hayden, or to have James play the Kemenche, or have Ariana perform Taumapuro on the track. And it's been very interesting. There was no obligation by us to have the producers use these musicians. They were just there as an option. And it was very interesting to see how that grew. And I think there's a lot of scope in that. I call it community building. you know, within music, within music creativity. It's a very fascinating and beautiful kind of process to be a part of.
And what is the range of the sort of music that's coming out of all these collaborations?
Well, I seem to be determined to work in projects that can't be defined or classified very easily, which means they're very hard to market, you know, because they don't sit on a shelf in a CD. Well, we don't have CD shops, but, you know, they don't fit into a category very easily at all. So in order to describe this music, I would say, firstly, I have to clarify, because I'm known as a classical musician, none of this music is classical. There's nothing on this that you would call classical music. They are essentially songs. Three of them are instrumentals. They don't have singing, but they are in that song world. And we have, you know, we have, I suppose, the drum and bass tradition is represented. Hip hop is being represented in there in a certain kind of way. There's no one rapping on any of the songs, but there is a kind of 80s synth pop in there. There is absolutely a sense of world music and multicultural layering within a lot of the songs.
I couldn't help noticing a certain prog rock quality about at least one of them. I look at James Euring. James Euring has come up with a sort of a sci-fi mad thing called The Revenge of the Land of the Long White Cloud, which features robots and Gaia and the end of the world and the beginning of a new world and I don't know what else.
Yeah, it's a fantastic concept of a dystopian future with a South Pacific AI that makes the decision to wipe out humanity because we're just no good for ourselves. And it's just beautifully, beautifully conveyed, I think.
But all of the songs are essentially, there is a connection to the pandemic. There's a connection to lockdown. There's a connection to things going wrong in the world, isn't there?
Absolutely. I mean, you can hear that in a lot of the lyrics in the songs. But also, it was a fascinating process to be involved in as a curator, because engaging with all of the artists, one of the things that emerged is that it's a very difficult time right now. I mean, we know that, but specifically for creatives and for musicians who really need an audience, it's extremely difficult, and it's impacting, I think, on motivation, you know, underlying motivation of why to do things. And this is really how the project came about, which was, what is it we need right now? We know what we're losing, but what do we need? And what we really needed was a sense of community and kind of meaningful collaboration. And so bringing people together in this way, it allowed each of the artists to express what they're going through in lockdown or in this period of time where audiences are not accessible, because the internet is not the same thing as giving a concert live in front of an audience.
That's the ending of the track Revenge of the Land of the Long White Cloud from the John Sarthas album of collaborations It's Already Tomorrow, which is released this week.